The story of SS Dover Hill. To mark World Storytelling Day this month, we share a World War II tale by Merchant Navy radio officer David Craig, courtesy of the Russian Arctic Convoy Museum project. In the supplement to the London Gazette of October 8, 1943, there was a list of names of 19 men. Five had been awarded the Order of the British Empire, and 14 the King's Commendation for Brave Conduct. The citation read simply, "For dangerous work in hazardous circumstances." I write the story as I remember it on behalf of the 19, as we all worked together and none of us did anything different from anyone else. On January the 13th, 1943, I joined the SS Dover Hill at anchor off Gourock in the Clyde. As I boarded, I discovered that we were bound for North Russia. We were heavily loaded with fighter aircraft, tanks, guns, lorries, and a large tonnage of shells and high explosives. We left the Clyde on January 23rd and arrived in Loch Ewe, where we lay at anchor until the rest of the merchant ships had gathered for our convoy. Loch Ewe is a very beautiful place in the summer, but with a northwesterly gale blowing and a few large, heavily laden merchant ships dragging their anchors, it can be very different. On February the 15th, 28 merchant ships set out in a gale for North Russia in the heavily defended convoy JW53. The escort was made up of three cruisers, an anti-aircraft cruiser, an escort carrier, 16 destroyers, two minesweepers, three corvettes, and two trawlers. Trouble was obviously expected. As we sailed north, the gale developed into a hurricane and ships began to get damaged. Our escort carrier was one of those sent back and our deck cargo began to break adrift, but we managed to save the tanks and kept on battering our way northwards. The loss of our escort carrier meant that we had no air cover, and as expected, a few days later, a German spotter plane arrived. The next day, we received a heavy attack by Ju 88 bombers. The blizzards, when they came, were always welcome as they hid us from the enemy. We arrived at the entrance to Kola Inlet, which is a long fjord with the Russian port of Murmansk near the top. We were all very tired and looking forward to having a good sleep, but we were very quickly disillusioned when about a mile up from the inlet, we passed a merchant ship on fire and crew taking to the lifeboats. The pilot cheerfully told us that on the way down to meet us, he had seen her being attacked by aircraft, obviously a common occurrence. We now understood why we had been fitted with so many anti-aircraft guns. We discharged our cargo at Murmansk and anchored. We were regularly attacked by ME-109 fighter bombers, which swooped down over the top of the hill and came tearing at us about 20 to 30 feet above the water. These attacks only lasted for about a minute, but were very vicious. We had gunners wounded and more damage to our ship. On April 8th, we were in the Mishukov anchorage. I was playing chess in the officers' mess when "Action Station" sounded. I looked out and saw two Ju 88 bombers coming up from astern, high up. Our Bofors shells were bursting below them, so when they turned away, I assumed we'd beaten them off and stepped out on deck. That was a foolish thing to do, as unknown to me, the planes had released their bombs before turning away. Five exploded on both sides of the ship and blew me off my feet. As I got up, a gun layer came down and pointed out a hole in the deck a few feet from where I had been standing. It was obvious that a sixth bomb had gone through the main deck into our coal bunkers and had not exploded. But we were advised that there were no British bomb disposal people in North Russia. We then realised we'd have to dig the bomb out ourselves. Although the Dover Hill was only a battered old merchantman, she was our home, and no German was going to make us leave her while she was still afloat. The captain asked for volunteers, and 19 of us, including our captain, formed our own bomb disposal squad. We had no equipment, only a few shovels and 19 stout hearts. When the Russian authorities heard what we were doing, although they had many exploded bombs to deal with, they kindly offered to send one of their own bomb disposal officers to remove the detonator if we could get the bomb on deck. When we had dug about 10 feet down into the coal, we found the tail fins and by their size decided our bomb must be a 1,000-pound one. Unfortunately, the Germans also discovered what we were up to and bombed us again, hoping to set it off. Due to the explosions, the coal fell back into the space where we were digging, so things got difficult. But after 2 days and nights of hard work, we finally got it up on deck. I was standing beside the bomb with two of my fellow officers as our Russian friends started to unscrew the retaining ring of the detonator. But after a few turns, it stuck. He then took a small hammer and a punch and tapped it to get it moving. I can honestly say that every time he hit it, I felt the hair on the back of my neck standing up against the hood of my duffel coat. After removing the detonator, we dumped the bomb into the Kola Inlet, where it probably lies to this day. I returned to Murmansk in 1980, mainly to find the grave of a friend who had been killed by a bomb splinter which went through his steel helmet. With the help of the Russian authorities, I was able to do so. I went back many times after that with other veterans. I also found out that the Russian bomb disposal officer who helped us was called Pavel Panin. I heard from the Northern Naval Museum in Murmansk that he was killed in August 1943. He was a very brave man who we admired very much. It would have been wonderful to have met him after all those years, but it was not to be. David sadly passed away in 2021, aged 96. His story is published with kind permission from his daughter, Dorothy Forwell. You can find out more about him through the Russian Arctic Convoy Museum project at racmp.co.uk and the Logbook Project, and that is thelogbookproject.com.